We have lots of questions that have come in. We won't have time to read all of them. We will post the written answers to the remaining ones on our website. So, but we're going to get right into at least one question for each speaker, and I'll turn it back to Wendy so that she can facilitate that.
Great. Thanks, Victoria. So the first question is for Sean, and the question is, would you share some information or data on the economic benefits to residents who implemented solar projects?
That's a great question. We definitely don't have sort of comprehensive data from across the country, but we do have some good examples about individuals and what they've saved, and we have good examples of sort of in general how solar is saving customers money that could be, you know, would be pretty indicative, if not even more strong for low-income communities. So happy to, in the follow-up, see if I can share a couple resources on that.
Great. Thanks, Sean. So the next question is for Stan. And the question is, what are your recommended business models for solar projects for low-income markets, and what are key regulatory changes most needed?
On the business model side, it depends on, of course, there's we talked about single-family, multifamily, community, and those are very they cover a very wide spectrum of business models. But I think foundationally, it has to be a model. And I think, Sean pointed to this, Peter pointed to this, and it's certainly in our experience with them, making sure that the customers have savings from day one. This customer group does not have the flexibility of making long-term investments. So if it's a model that doesn't have that, certainly it's probably not one that's going to reach many low-income families. On the regulatory side, I think regulatory policy is bringing resources to these projects. Again, where incentives were very useful in creating the general market and helping early adopters, a decade ago and over the past 5 years, go solar. The low-income market segment is at that stage now, right? They haven't been the target of the past low-income or solar policies. So bringing resources and differential incentives as higher SREC, value or incentives to the table is what really legislators and regulators should be looking at doing to help incentivize the growth of this segment.
Great. Thank you, Stan. The next question is for Peter, and the question is, how is the affordable solar marketed? How do you reach the low-income customers?
Great question. Customer acquisition. Right now, NYSERDA, who implements New York Sun, is a great resource. But really, it is going to be through installers, through community-based organizations. There's no shortage of great organizations at the community and local level in New York City, in Buffalo, across the state, that are very tuned into developments and programs. And, certainly there is an obligation that falls to us, to the commission, to NYSERDA, to get the word out. But really we use, existing networks, whether it's community-based organizations or the hundreds of installers that are already participating in the New York Sun program to get the word out and share the opportunity. So hopefully that answers the question.
Great, thank you. Victoria?
Go ahead, Wendy. I was going to say,
shall I do one more?
If let's do it. If people can stay over for a couple minutes, it's okay with me.
Okay, just do one more for Sean, and if others have anything to share, feel free to chime in. The question is, what is the ratio of renters to homeowners among low-income families? And for renters, what are the program offerings for low-income renters?
So I don't actually have the exact number in front of me, and I think data can be a little bit tough to find on this. We use census data and treasury data, and have gotten some sort of general rubrics, but nothing I'd want to quote as a specific number on that. But in terms of the benefits, that really is where both community shared solar and virtual net metering come in. The ability to subscribe to a local project, whether it's one project in particular that might support a whole affordable housing unit and help offset common, common energy use or offset everybody's energy use, or through shared solar, an individual or family subscribing to a portion of a project. The ability to not have that project be on your own roof is really critical. And so programs that enable people to subscribe to local projects and not just on their roof are critical to delivering those benefits to renters.
Great. Thank you, Sean. Back to you, Victoria.
Thank you, Wendy. I really want to thank the audience for joining us for the 90 minutes today. I want to thank Stan, Sean, and Peter for great presentations and for the great work you're doing. It's obvious you're doing cutting-edge work in a very kind of pioneering best practices in a new and very important field. So we were happy that you could join us today. For the audience, as we said, the proceedings will be posted in a few weeks on our webpage, the State and Local Climate and Energy Program webpage, the address that you see on your screen. So please, in a couple of weeks, check that out. We do have all of your names, so we will be sending an email to you to let you know that those have been posted. You can also join our newsletter to hear that news, plus learn about upcoming webcasts. And as many of the questions as we can get to that were not asked today, we will provide written responses to those and post those on our website as well. So thanks again for joining, and we hope that this has been helpful to you. Have a good rest of your day.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect. Speakers, please hold the line.